Welcome to the Coach Dave Love Podcast with NBA shooting coach Dave Love and your host, Matt Robertson. Exploring the cutting edge of evidence-based shooting development in basketball today. From shooting form to skill acquisition to shot metrics. This is the Coach Dave Love Podcast.
Welcome to the Coach Dave Love Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Robertson, and as always, the star of the show, Coach Dave Love. NBA shooting coach, what's going on today, sir?
Hi, Matt. Not a lot is going on. Having a nice little Saturday, even though it's a Wednesday, but it's a holiday. And Frank the Tank style had a nice little Saturday with the family. So that was delightful. What's going on with you?
Wow. Man, just living my best life. I was in a suit 10 minutes ago, thought, you know, dress for the job you want, coming on the pod, decided, nah, I'm good with being the host. I don't need the EP credit too, so I went with the hoodie. You know, it's a good day at the office.
Perfect. Love it. So we have talked about doing the thought clock, and the thought clock hasn't really taken off yet, but we love the idea. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, love the idea. I think it's a perfect little item, but we need to find the place that it fits. And so in our discussion, we were kind of talking, one of the things that we do as coaches is ATOs or after timeouts. And one of my favorite things is coach will go into the huddle, drop a play, you know, we'll get a bucket out of it. And I'll be like, all right, Coach Todd, I'm like, put two on the board under, you know, that's two for Coach Todd. So we thought it'd be a good idea if we, you know, we go through our sections, we take a timeout, a little commercial break, and then when we come back, we do an ATO. We put up a little time on the thought clock, and then Coach Dave, I'm going to hold you accountable to this. Maybe not 24 seconds, but just a concise kind of rundown of what we just did pre-pod. How do you feel about that? I like that idea a lot.
I really like it too, and I do concise really, really well. So I'm going to have no trouble with this one. So thank you for laughing. I hope the dozens of people know that was very tongue in cheek as I ramble on about how concise I am not.
I have a dozen words I use to describe Coach Dave Love. Concise is not on that list.
Tangential, is that one?
It's on the list.
Perfect.
The magic lives in the tangents. So today, go for it. Introduce the topic. Coach, I want you to take the lead today. I'm just a coach listening in. I got a bunch of questions for you, but I want you to take the lead. What are we doing today?
We're going to talk about, because we're recording this now in late March, and a lot of people listening are probably going into their off season. And so we're going to talk about how to plan shooting development for a team for the offseason, what coaches can do to plan their individual shooting development for some players.
I love that. My first question for you before you even get started, Dave, have you done a lot of consulting with groups and teams in helping them organize their offseason schedule? Or is this more of like a general idea that you'd like to bring to your individual players?
This is what we're going to talk about in this podcast is heavily based on what I do with the pro teams that I consult with and the college teams and what I've talked about doing with high school teams that I've consulted with. So this is going to be reality based and as close to what I try to do. Obviously, every situation is a little bit different. But what I try to do in the jobs that I do.
Cool. I like that.
All right. So let's start with a couple of common mistakes that people make as coaches going into their off season. And you can be the voice of the people. I love that nickname. I feel like it's perfect for you. And just kind of chime in with, you think of yourself as the coach, as the listener, and chime in with the questions that people might have as I ramble on. So a common mistake that people will make is just trying to do too much. And trying to say, well, okay, what are we going to work on this offseason? we're going to make every player better at every single skill and just try to, which is a great idea. That would be awesome if it worked. And guess what? It doesn't work. And because you're trying to do so much with so many people, you don't end up making enough progress or digging deep enough with anybody on anything to make a tangible change. So the first piece of advice would be, don't try to do too much. Be very specific. And that's really what we're going to dive into in this episode is, like, what do we get specific about and how do we kind of plan that out?
Cool. I'm just starting to think about how specific we're being. And when you're looking at a program like this, looking at the team as a whole, are there sort of like general skills that you're looking to improve for everybody, or is this super granular, super customized per player?
Well, it's a great lead into kind of where I want to start with this. So what I would encourage, and maybe coaches even want to do this along with us, like if you've got your earbuds and you're not driving, you're sitting at your desk, like grab a notepad and kind of do this along with us. I would start by encouraging players or coaches to say, all right, list off every player that you know will be on your roster next year. And for a youth community coach, maybe you don't know that, but it might be a great planning exercise for you to go back and say, all right, let's imagine this is last season, the start of last season. Who was on my roster last year? And knowing what I know now, what would I do if I had this group again? And that might be a great training exercise for youth coach, but high school coaches, college coaches, pro coaches, you probably have a great idea of who 75% of your roster is going to be next year. So just kind of list all those players off. And then for each player, just take one of the macro skills, shooting, ball handling, passing, defense. Like, just take any of those and decide which one skill would each of those players benefit the team the most by improving. If you could only improve one of those macro skills per player, which one would it be, and how that would help the team win more games? Obviously, we'd like to check off a couple, but if you could only do one, what would you pick?
I mean, really focusing for each player, probably not reasonable to do more than, like, if you really had to choose like two things, is that kind of, I mean, in your experience, have you seen guys come back and with a hope, like improvements in three macro skill areas, like large, noticeable, measurable improvements?
Rarely. If they've got like really good people or a really good plan, that can happen. And we're absolutely going to try and do that. Like, once we start to work on shooting, eventually we're going to have to create some, is it inter or intra? I always get those two confused. When there's multiple, we want to create inter skill, multiple skill variability. So even within a shooting workout, we're going to be doing some passing. We're going to be doing some ball handling. And so we're going to get a chance to improve some other things. But we just want to make sure that we really know, like, if we only win one battle in this offseason for each player, what battle do we want to win?
That's really interesting. I like that. I like that idea. And I'm kind of wondering, like, for our case, our players all go home. They all leave, and it becomes such a battle. How much gym time do these kids have? Do they have a coach in their area that's helping them? Like, these are all challenges that I'm thinking about kind of as you're going through this for the college, specifically the college level, although pro players are going, you know, going home in the summer. And I mean, oftentimes they don't have the same gym access issues that 20-year-old kids have, but I mean, some of them are 20-year-old kids, I guess.
Well, so let's go through your group as the voice of the people, and just say, like, okay, so what are your challenges? Is that the season ends on what date roughly?
Yeah, so our season was over 3 weeks ago, or 4 weeks ago for us. We lost in the second round of the playoffs. And so immediately our like macro goal was like, all right, set up some gym time for our guys. So we have structure, we have place for them. And then two nights a week is for playing. So we have sort of a macro plan for them for the rest of the for the rest of the school year until they go home in 2 or 3 weeks, whatever that is. And then they'll get their off-season programming, which now that I say that out loud, maybe they should get their off-season programming at the beginning of the off-season, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. And that's exactly the kind of thing that we I hope people learn from this, that there'll be little things that you've always done a certain way where you think, oh, our off-season, kids go away for the off-season. Well, hold on, what have they been doing for the last 3 weeks? like your off season started 3 weeks ago, and you go, oh yeah, okay. You know, we could have had half hour player development workouts right from the beginning, and maybe you don't have that luxury. I was talking, we did the coaches clinic or at coaches clinic with the Calgary Surge, the Canadian team that I consult with, and we did a full day long coaches clinic. And one of the exercises was exactly this, where we sat down to plan as though you knew what your team was going to be, who you're going to work with, and how. And one of the coaches said, like, I coach a community team. We don't get any individual time at all. And I said, I understand that. That's really, really tough for you. But what time does your practice start? And he says, we get gym time at 7 o'clock. And I said, do you start right at 7? He says, no, we start at like 7:05. Perfect. Mm-hmm. There's 5 minutes. Like, can you, throughout the season, can you pick one kid that you get them there so their shoes are on and tied, and the second you get in the gym, it's you and that player for 5 minutes at the beginning of every practice. Now, do you do a water break? Yeah, we do a couple water breaks. Perfect. There's 3 more minutes twice. Mm-hmm. And that could be with a different player. And then, or the same player again, like there are these little windows that we're leaving undiscovered. And I think we can start to discover some of them. So, that's a great point on your part that, oh yeah, shoot, we've got this, we've got a foundation, a time to lay a foundation. And now when the kids do leave school, for how long are they typically gone? They're leaving middle of April.
What are we now? March. So yeah, they'll leave end of April and not come back till like first week September, or like last week of August for some of them.
So perfect. So you have in March and April, you've got an opportunity to teach them what they need to be doing in May, June, July, and August. And then September, they come back. Are you right into games?
No. So we'll do preseason run, workouts and practices or tryouts for 2 or 3 weeks, and then preseason schedule of a couple weeks, and then into season. So we have like a month of semi-structured time that we're able to use as part of that off-season development. That's a really good idea, Dave.
So, and then this was like, you're describing a version of the challenge that I face with Dwayne Dedman with the Orlando Magic, is that he was going to be in Dallas for the off season. I was going to be following Alfred Payton around and be in Orlando. We weren't going to be in the same place, but at the end of the season, we had 4 days or 3 or 4 days together. And so it was, all right, 2 workouts per day. I'm going to teach you the drills I want you to do. And I'm going to teach you the habit that I want you to focus on. And then we shared video back and forth throughout the remainder of the off season, which is about the same length as your off season. And so for three months or so, we were sharing video, and then he came back into training camp with completely different mechanics. It's just like having the plan and taking advantage of the time that you do have.
It's freaking brilliant. And big shouts to you, by the way. I sent you video of one of my players, one of our bigs, and you broke down his shot and gave me kind of a bit of a look at how we could kind of improve. And he's committed to doing the couple of drills in the specific manner and checking in with me throughout the summer. And so really appreciate you, because I think that he will really benefit from that. We will really benefit from that, and you will get nothing from that. So thank you very much for, except for my undying gratitude, of course, which maybe is worth something.
Yeah, no, I get to talk to my buddy Matt more regularly, so that's what's in it for me. And then I get the pride of having helped somebody that I like, and hopefully building a new relationship with somebody that I will like once I get to know them a little bit more. So can I digress for a quick second?
Please.
We talked about one of the common mistakes, and I think we've sort of touched on it, but I want to be really clear about another common mistake that people will make in their off-season planning is just not having a larger plan, that they go into every day like a clean slate and saying, okay, what are we going to work on today? And never get a chance to build, or never take the opportunity to build on what they've done. So they have just a whole bunch of too small sample sizes to do any meaningful work, because they just unconsciously chose to do something different every single day. And I think that's part of what we're talking about today, is being specific about what are you working on and being consistent about working on that. So thank you for letting me kind of digress a little bit here.
No, I really like that. And I so often, when players go off and do their own development, that tends to be the way they go about it. I'm working on ball handling today, coach. Okay, what are you doing? Well, I saw this drill on YouTube yesterday, and so I'm going to work on that today. And then you see them a week later and you're like, oh, cool, you're still working on that drill? They're like, no. I saw this thing on Instagram yesterday and now I'm working on that today. You know, like right. That seems
well,
to be
did you get better at that ball handling thing that you were working on?
For the 10 minutes that I did it, yeah.
yeah, exactly. So
it's all about the sexy new thing. And I, you know, you and Phil Becker talked about it on the pod, whether I don't know when this will come out, but one of the last pods that we did with Phil Beckner talked about building foundations and building off of that. And building over the course of a stretch, I think just as your average guy, I just think it makes so much sense when you put it that way.
Perfect. Should we take a commercial?
Let's take a quick break.
Hey there, basketball fans. I'm NBA shooting coach Dave Love, and I've got exciting news just for you. Introducing my exclusive free basketball shooting newsletter. It's packed with insights and techniques straight from the hardwood. Have you ever wondered how NBA players improve their shots? Or how you could get to the next level, whether you're a college player, a coach, or a budding youth player? My newsletter brings all this and more directly to your inbox. Each edition is a deep dive into the world of basketball shooting. I'll share some of the tips and ideas that I use with my NBA clients, tailored for every level of the game. But wait, there's more. Subscribers receive exclusive monthly discounts on my online products. From training videos to personalized coaching sessions, you'll get it all for a fraction of the price. And the best part of all, it's absolutely free to join. So what are you waiting for? Elevate your game and join a community of passionate players and coaches from around the globe. Signing up is easy. Just visit CoachDaveLove.com.
Welcome back. All right. So this is the first iteration, Dave. This is an after ATO. Dave drew something up, and now I'm going to put some time up on the thought clock. Dave, please run the play. What did we just go through before the commercial break?
I want coaches at the beginning of the offseason to be very specific who's on your roster and what macro skill do they need to be focused on, and then commit to being accountable to improving that one macro skill for each player on your roster.
That's the clip. Crushed it.
Yeah.
12 seconds left on the clock.
I feel like we got a good shot. Like I feel like that was, yeah. Did it go in? I don't know if it went in, but we executed. So I'm happy about that.
If it was me shooting it lately, it probably didn't go in. Sorry, continue on.
Okay, or me in the 2000s. Like it's been a rough century for Dave, given that I never practice my own shooting. But maybe next century it'll be better.
You know, we'll talk then. If you know the bionic knees and ankles and hips will be around, you'll be good.
Okay, so now let's discuss. You've got your list of players, and if you've got 12 guys or 12 people on that roster, I would imagine four of them are going to be listed as need to improve their shooting. Maybe it's six, maybe it's two, but you're going to have a smaller number that like they would really help the roster if they could just improve their shooting. Then I need you to kind of give some thought to what resources do we have? And I mean like the physical resources of gym time that we discussed a second ago, but also coach time. Like what people have the skill set and the time to help these players work on their habits in this player development time that we're trying to build. So who do you have available to help? Do those people fit well together? Is there a certain pairing of this coach and this player that might fit? Like, who doesn't necessarily have a skill set that will help and that we need to avoid pairing these two people together? Like, just give some thought to that.
So for a lot of coaches, and I know a couple of our guys are working with trainers over the course of the summer, like, how often do you have a relationship with your player's trainer? Like, are you able to consult with a coach that they're going to have over the summer? If they are going somewhere else and leaving, do you get to have a relationship with them, or is it sometimes hands on, hands off?
That's a really good question. And I guess the answer is kind of in both worlds. And so I have a few people that I mentor that are, you know, shooting coaches or skills coaches with a focus on shooting. And I'm always encouraging them, if you've got a new player, reach out to their head coach. Because the last thing any of us want, the player, the head coach, or the skills trainer, the last thing we want is for any of us to waste time working on a skill that will never be used. So I always remind the skills trainers that we do not own the player. I mean, nobody really owns the players, but they're not on our team. We don't have a team. And so what you want to do is work on skills that are going to benefit the player in their current situation the most. So call the head coach and ask how the head coach would want that player to be used. And what skills they would like, and try and focus on that. So I do try to, even at the NBA level, build a relationship with the trainer where maybe a guy goes home and he's got his guy at home for a couple of weeks, and let him the trainer know these are the things we want done on a daily basis, with a professional trainer that gets it. You can have some success. Like if I phoned Phil Beckner and said, like, "Hey Phil, you know, we've got he's coming back. He's going to be in Phoenix training with you. Can you make sure he gets 15 minutes a day of doing this stuff?" I believe Phil would actually do it. I also know that there are some other guys who would be like, "All good, coach. I got it." And they're not going to do anything that you say. It's going to be all over the map. But then if you've done that for the player then sees who tried to take care of them and who maybe ignored their best, the player's best interest for their own best interest. And it will work out in the long run.
Yeah, that's fair. Thank you for kind of sharing. Cause I think about that a lot, that relationship between it's a love triangle in the least literal sense of it, in that we're trying to communicate at the sort of the top areas of the triangle, with the player being the bottom portion. And the communication and relationship has to be strong, I think, for it to be a strong triangle. Did I land the plane? Is that okay?
Yeah. You're absolutely on the mark. So now we've got this, we've identified who might be working with whom, got the word whom in there. Very happy about that. The next thing is I want you to spend a little bit of time trying to figure out, like, of these players, because you might not, if you got six people, you might not have enough individual time for each of the six. And these are tough decisions, but they're probably tough decisions we got to make. Who would increase the value of their team the most if they could improve the skill of shooting? And sometimes that's like, there may be a guy that's deep or a person that's deep on your bench who really needs to work on the shot. But even if they turn into Steph Curry, they're not going to impact your roster that much. They're not a strong enough defender. They're not, like, whatever the reason. Even taking a huge step forward, they wouldn't become significantly more valuable. Well, what is there somebody, are there a couple of people that just trying to improve one category would make them a tremendously more valuable player to your team? And I want to emphasize how just improving one category is the important part. That we don't necessarily want to expect a player in one offseason to go from poor to elite. Try and be reasonable with your expectations and say, like, no, our goal is to make this guy or this person go from poor to below average or average to above average. I just trying to improve one category.
I don't know how comfortable you are talking about players from other teams, so I generally try to be not so specific, but I watch the Thunder a lot because SGA, good Canadian boy, they're a lot of fun. And Josh Giddey is somebody who, when you look at, like, return on investment, if he was a good shooter, that massively affects the exponential growth of their spacing and everything else, you know? And I think every team has a player where it's like, oh man, if he could just do this one thing, so much would unlock. You know, we have a player that I'm thinking of right now that, when it comes down to it, struggled to get him on the floor because the spacing just absolutely dies when him and one other player who can't shoot very well are out there. Oh yeah, I for coaches out there planning their offseason, there is definitely a hierarchy of risk versus, or not risk and reward, but a return on investment for investing in one specific player. Sorry to derail you, Dave.
Totally valued. Like, that's what the people think. And you are the voice of the people. And so you got to, when you got something like that to say, you got to say it, buddy. So good on you. Good job by you. There was a point in there that I wanted to emphasize. I thought you said a really smart thing and it escaped me. Josh Giddey.
I said the word hierarchy, which, if we're going
that
on,
that is a smart word.
The intras and the inters, really on brand.
Right. Great point. This kind of leads me into, like, be smart about your goal for these players. Like, a lot of the players that I work with at the NBA level are the guys who are shooting, 50 something or 60% from the free throw line. And so there's always the instinct of front office members or head coaches that just may not necessarily understand the development process to say, like, God, he would be so valuable if he could make a between the breaks, three off of a pick and roll. And you're like, yeah, I mean, so would a lot of people here. This guy can't make a free throw yet. And so just trying to temper that enthusiasm to say, like, all right, if the 55% free throw shooter simply becomes a 72% free throw shooter this season, but we also set the stage for them becoming an open corner three catch and shoot guy the next season. And then that sets the stage for maybe above the break three-point shooter the next season. Like, that's the kind of thinking that we need to be aware of, as opposed to like trying to just shoot for the stars. Like, oh, it would be great if this guy could make a logo three. Yeah. There's five guys in the world that's a valuable shot for. Let's your guy can't make a free throw yet. Let's focus more attention on that as opposed to the pie in the sky dream.
I mean, you look at the math that you just did there, taking a 52% free throw shooter to a 70%. Depending on the player's usage rate, that's like 0.36 or 36 points per 100 possessions. Is that how that works? You're leaving a lot of points on the table, depending on the usage rate of the player. And yeah, the offense would unlock and be so much more valuable. But even in the micro sense, you're still talking about dramatic improvement. Yeah, again, we come back to Aaron Gordon. You know, that 30-point improvement is so massive. You're able to get a ton more juice out of the orange.
Well, and everybody has, and this is probably one of the most, probably top three most important things I learned from my mentor. Everybody has their fastball. Like, if we imagine all these guys as a Major League Baseball pitcher with a 95 mile an hour fastball, they all have a skill that is their 95 mile an hour fastball. It's just, if you're working with the shooting coach, especially one like me, shooting probably isn't it. And so it's not that we're trying to turn shooting into your fastball. It's that we're just trying to not let it be the thing that holds you back. And so if all a player can do is just become somebody that is a threat to make it the open one. So as you described it, teams aren't sagging off and just completely destroying your spacing. Then that's a big win. That it's not that you have to turn these people into elite. You just have to take the thing that is currently holding them back and make them capable at it. And then all of a sudden, now their fastball, they get to use more often because somebody has to now honor their once below average changeup, which is now an average changeup. They can't sit on it anymore.
The cross sport analogy is one of my favorites, as you know. No, that was
golf
perfect.
Golf and baseball, then.
It carries over. You're right. Golf and baseball, very transferable from an analogy, from an analogous standpoint. All right, let's take a quick timeout, a little 20-second, and we'll be back.
Hey there, basketball fans. Coach Dave Love here with an exciting opportunity to revolutionize your shooting game. Introducing my exclusive shot development systems, Pure Release. Consistency and balance, and fluidity and arc. Each system is designed to target key aspects of your shooting technique, transforming you into a more effective player on the court. Pure Release focuses on perfecting your shot release. Consistency and balance enhances your stability and accuracy, and fluidity and arc works on your ball path and trajectory of your shot. Find out the drills and progressions that I use with my NBA players to improve these important habits. Can't decide which one to choose? No worries. Grab the bundle and get all three systems at a fantastic value. It's a complete package to elevate every part of your shooting game. And there's a special deal for all my podcast listeners. Use the promo code PODCAST20 at checkout to save 20% on any of the shot development systems. Don't miss this chance to train like the pros. Visit CoachDaveLove.com/store and take your first step towards shooting success. That's CoachDaveLove.com/store.
Welcome back. Coach Dave, ATO, had to draw up a play. Let's put some time up on the thought clock. Let's summarize what we just went through.
So you're going to have probably this offseason three or four people that really need to improve their shooting as the primary skill that would really add a lot of value to them. Then try to think back to like what kind of shot would really help the team the most if this player was able to make that. It might, if for your weaker shooters, it might just be, geez, if they could just consistently make a free throw. then I can play them at the end of a close game. It might be just an open catch and shoot three. What would be the next layer of shot that we hope to add to their arsenal?
Talk about just bringing value to the table when you make these incremental improvements. Dave, I do have a question for you. When looking at this, like, sort of global offseason program, so let's again take whatever player you have in your on your roster, for example, and you build a program for him that goes kind of spans the offseason. The people want to know, like, how do you know when to take the next step? Like, can you talk just for a minute about adjusting challenge point on this kind of scale when looking at a full offseason plan?
Well, like I said, a lot of the guys that I end up working with are poor, even free throw shooters. Their mechanics are holding them back so much that that even in the controlled environment of a free throw, they have trouble executing. And so it would make sense for me saying, okay, our first milestone is really to become a 70-something percent free throw shooter. It would make sense to only shoot free throws. Only that would be so outrageously boring and then lacking any kind of other game context that was going to occur 95% of the time. Like, how often are you at the free throw line in a game? I want to add that there's more game context. So even though the player is focused on trying to become a 70-something percent free throw shooter, we are heavily working in the background to develop skills that will apply into situations other than just the free throw line. I think you're always kind of working on the front yard. Like, if you're selling your house, you want to make sure that front yard looks nice. So when somebody drives by, they want to check out your house. But also, you're working on the backyard too, and maybe not as important, but taking care of that. You get...
It's a winner for
me. Okay.
No, perfect. I keep thinking about the kid that you talked about four or five episodes ago, who like went to get his ball, his rebound, and then walked back to the spot in front of the rim and was like, "I'm out here grinding." Like, it's so boring. It has to be engaging. It has to.
Well, and I had a conversation with my mentor like 5 days ago, and we both said, like, we were talking about the evolution of how we teach it, and we both become far more variable in the way that we're doing way less block practice. And he said, poor so-and-so, one of the greatest 50 players of all time, one of his first clients. And I went, oh, yeah, poor Tristan Thompson. Like, that guy, I just block practiced him to death. Now, in my defense, it might have been a good thing, seeing as how Tristan Thompson had never shot with his right hand before that. Maybe more block practice was necessary, but I still did way too much of it to... and I probably could have moved on a lot faster than I actually did.
I was going to say, you guys just now spent a lot of time working on your backyards. That's all.
There you go. once you've kind of, as a staff, you've identified the player, what they need to be working on, what kind of shots you want to be able to want them to be able to perform in. We've got to kind of identify, do we think the player will want to do this? And so you got to kind of be really honest about yourself or with yourself about, does the player have time? Do you have the relationship with the player that if you make a suggestion, they might listen? And then do they have the maturity to see that they do need to work and be willing to work? And especially as you're starting off a program, I would encourage coaches to be overly picky and take on less, take on fewer battles but make sure that you win those battles. And if you win those battles, then the other people are going to see the win and say, oh, I want to get better too. And you have a chance to get people on board that might not have been on board the first iteration or the first time around. So don't be afraid to say, I don't know if this guy is going to want to do this. Well, then fight that battle. Fight the battle of, like, maybe you don't spend any time in the gym with them. You're just working on getting the self-awareness from them to say, like, hey, you got to get better and I can help you get better. And but spend your time in the gym with the person that is actually invested.
I think about what you said about the maturity level. And a lot of times you'll have a good enough relationship with the player that you'll have a pretty good idea, I think, based on how the conversation goes, about whether they're going to be working on that skill or not. I think about my time coaching in the pros. And a lot of the time it's like, oh, coach, you're right. And I'm like, do you think I'm right? Or do you just want me to stop talking? Where with a lot of the college guys, it seems to be a much more open conversation, maybe, or accepted in conversation, where I really get the feel that these guys are actually going to go work on this thing. Like, I think if you know your players well, you're going to have a feel for the battles that you're going to need to fight and the ones that you're probably going to be okay with.
Yeah. And the more that you do this, the more you can kind of recognize those tells. Like, I can picture exactly the guy that you're talking about with the, you're right. And the other version that I encounter is the guy who's like, oh, that's a good idea. Let me see if I can do that real quick. And they shoot like one shot from the logo at full speed, trying to make this tiny little adjustment that, and they're like, oh yeah, that does feel better. And you're like, no, you, number one, nothing changed. You shot it exactly the way that you've shot every other one. And no, you didn't feel any difference, that you recognize those tells to go like, oh, okay, that guy is still full of BS. He's being polite about it, but I haven't won him over yet. And I always talk about, and I've said it a couple of times in this podcast now, that, you know, it doesn't matter how many battles you win, just win the battles that you fight. Like, if the battle is, I need to make this person more self-aware, then that can be an effective use of an offseason to get them to finally buy in that, I'm not really a shooter. Me going 6-for-7 one game when I'm 1-for-14 for the, yeah, that you're not a shooter. And I, so what were you going to say?
I have two thoughts that I need to keep one because it's good for later. I do wonder sometimes that guy that takes the one shot that he's like, oh yeah, that does feel better. You talk about self-awareness, and sometimes I wonder if he's like, oh yeah, I put that into practice and it worked. You know, I wonder sometimes if they do believe the thing that worked, you know, that like a lot of these guys are so freaking naturally gifted that they walk onto the court and they're able to do things that, like, I've been playing for 20, however many, 30, whatever years that I could never hope to. And they just woke up today and could do that thing. Like, do you think sometimes that there is a lack of self-awareness, or do you think that's just like, whatever, man, get out of my face in a polite manner? Just curious.
There's the lack of, I think it's mostly lack of self-awareness. Like, now you get somebody like Steph Curry, and you said to him like, hey, shoot one like old Lonzo Ball and make it. I bet he could do an amazing imitation. I bet he could shoot a pretty high percentage doing it. Just like you hear stories about like Phil Mickelson, the golfer who's golf's left-handed, and like he'll go out and play a round right-handed and shoot a 73. You're like, Jesus, come on. Like, how talented must you be? Like, the guys that need work on their shooting are not those people.
Yeah.
And so if they knew, and I just said this to an assistant GM of an NBA team that I was talking to this morning, if they knew what they needed to do to get the ball, like if they knew the feeling, they'd have done it already.
The extra zero on the end of the pay.
And
the extra zero on the end of the paycheck isn't enough incentive to like just do the thing that they know what they need to do.
Putting a ball in the basket from 25 feet away with somebody trying to stop you is hard, and they're not necessarily good at that skill. And it needs to start with kind self-awareness that you're not great at this, and we can help you get better. But it will take work. And that's the other thing that, you want to get into the next one now?
The next one.
Do you want to talk about I think that the other little idea, would be that, now I've lost it.
Neither of us know what the next one is.
Yeah, you said, okay, and we're leaving this in. This is going to be proof that we do not edit this, that this is all happening in real time. This is just two dudes talking. Do you remember you said there were two things that you wanted to talk about, and you'll save the other one for later?
I do remember what the next one was. Thank you. Did you watch Jack Gaulke play basketball?
No.
He is the shooter.
Hold on. Yeah, sorry, keep explaining.
He's hit 17 or 18 threes in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. They beat Kentucky in the first round. Man, after we hang up, I'm going to send you the highlight tape because the shots are absurd. Like, he's taking the worst version of every one of the shots, and his form is quite unconventional. Is a knockdown shooter. But, you were talking about how if you were going to be a shooter, like if you could be a shooter, you would be a shooter. This guy took like 360 shots this year, and 350 of them were 3-point shots, and like two were breakaway layups, you know, fast break layups. I just think what you said was super representative of that. And just as a fun tangent, I'll send you the clip because it's a lot of fun. It's not good, but it's a lot of fun.
I'm aware of this guy, and I became mostly aware of him because of that number, that 90-whatever% of his attempts this year were from the 3-point line. With the Dallas Mavericks, we have a guy named Max Hooper on our player development / video coordinator role. Wonderful guy, great young coach. And Max holds the record for, in his senior year of college, every single attempt was a 3-point shot. And it sounds like a similar guy or similar kind of guy where Max has a little bit of an unconventional shot. But it goes in a lot. And so just going back to our conversation that we have had a couple of times and we'll continue to have throughout. Then what do you do with those guys who like shoot 40% from three in games, but they do it like with a weird shot, and like applaud them is my answer. Like, thank you. I wanted the ball to go in and it did. So keep doing it exactly how you're doing it. If you can make 40% in games and then like with a young player, just to kind of piggyback on what I've said before, I'd also be testing to see like, okay, if you're 14 and you're shooting 40% from three, well, the defense is probably really, really bad as well. Play against 16-year-olds and see if you can still get that funky shot off. And if you can, awesome. Keep doing it. You're good at that solution. That's all we need to do is help people find a solution that they're good at. It doesn't have to be a specific solution.
I think it was like pod number 3 or 4 when we talked to Nick from Gonzaga, and he was talking about speeding up the release for these guys who are new to the D1 level. If you're able to keep your release consistent at that improved speed or that increased speed, fire away. You know, Dave, that's one of the things that I've learned from you through this process is just doesn't matter what it looks like. You know, that's a super simple thing. All the other stuff is important, but we are at the end of the day a results-based sport. Kyle Korver shot 50% from three in a season one time, and it looks incredible. But also Brady Heslip shot 44% from three in a season, and it doesn't quite look as incredible, you know, but it's 44% from three. Anyway, I really appreciate that, man. That's I've learned a whole ton of stuff here in the last 14 episodes, but just, I think about that a lot. One of my guys has an unconventional-ish shot and it goes in. Like, let's let it ride.
I feel like we've done a pretty good job of being reasonably concise on this one. Well, I've got a little counter that says about 43 minutes, plus we got an opening and a couple of commercials. So let's call it 45. How do you feel about the duration that we're at right now?
Listen, we're right in the sweet spot where you want to be.
Dave, which we've really never been before.
Uncharted territory. Okay. Let's not ruin it here. Okay. So Dave, give me the clip. So when we look back at this episode, the couple of bullet points that you want people to really take away from this, give them to me straight, give them to me concise, and that's the marketing clip for the EP here.
Okay, so I want people to be really focused on time is probably your most valuable resource. So you've got to be hyper aware of the amount of time you have. Identify the couple of players on your roster that need work on their shot, determine what habit each of them needs to be working on and in what setting you'd like them to be able to apply that new habit into next season. For example, we need to get their guide hand off the ball, their shooting hand more underneath the middle of the ball, and they're a capable free throw shooter, but I'd love them to be able to make an open corner three more regularly. Take as much of your player development time as possible to those people that will offer the most value to your team next season. And sometimes that's going to require some really tough decisions where we want to help everybody. You can't help everybody. Who will offer the most value?
Coach David Love, you're great. You're a delight as always. Please tell the people where they can find you if they're looking for you.
Well, I have this podcast. You're listening to that right now. And so continue to listen to that and subscribe to this, please. And then, like, please tell friends. We've got some really nice comments from people about, you know, this has been really helpful and we're trying to make it helpful. So share the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, and then find me on social media at Coach Dave Love. Where can people find you, Matthew?
As of yesterday, they could find me on Twitter. Apparently there's a million Matt Robertsons in the world. So Coach Matty Rob, is where they can find me on Twitter, which is whatever, but, that's where
Coach
they can find
Matty
me.
Rob.
I followed you yesterday.
So excited.
This is news. This is news. I have posted zero times, so don't get excited, but you can find me there.
All right. I'm excited. Do you have on your bio, host of the Coach Dave Love podcast?
Give me 30 seconds after we get offline and it will be. For the listeners out there that have stuck with us this long, if we made a reference to something physical, you can find it on YouTube. If you're listening to it on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcast, you can find it on YouTube. Thanks for joining us. As always, if you have anything that helped from this podcast or any feedback or any questions from this podcast, please reach out to Coach Dave. And now me, if you like, and we will do our best to address it in the pod. Really appreciate you sticking with us. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of the Coach Dave Love podcast. To stay up to date with our future episodes, please remember to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to sign up for Coach Love's free shooting newsletter on CoachDaveLove.com and be sure to follow him on social media. You can find him at Coach Dave Love.